Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
May I have your attention, please? Now, taking the airwaves on 97.3 The Fan, San Diego's own, Gwynn and Chris.
Featuring Tony Gwynn Jr.
They were trying to make you feel better right there.
Make me feel better?
Yeah.
Okay. Former Cincinnati livers. People who lived in Cincinnati. I don't know.
Livers? Okay.
Residents?
Residents, yeah.
All right.
He just dropped the livers.
And Chris Ello.
I want to just say that Antonio Brown, based on his actions the last year and a half, does seem to spend a little time out where the buses don't run. That's all I want to say.
Gwynn and Chris starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
1-2 pitch is hit high in the air to deep right center field. Aquino goes back, looks up, and this one is up and out. A home run for Francisco Mejia. His 11th career home run and his fourth at Great American Ballpark.
What's happening in San Diego? Welcome to Gwynn and Chris.
We're back.
I remember this show. Used to be on 97.3 The Fan in the afternoons, 3 to 7.
Yeah.
Used to be. My goodness, last show we did was last Thursday, Tony Gwynn Jr. How are you? Where you been? What have you been up to? What's going on?
Not
going
to say I didn't enjoy those 2 days off. Three days off.
Right? Three plus a weekend. I got to be honest with you. I ran into a couple of our listeners yesterday, and they were having withdrawals. Withdrawals.
Really?
And, you know, I just want to say,
that.
Hey, we're back.
In most cases, I don't like withdrawals, but in this case, I kind of like it.
Withdrawals are good. Yeah, they're like, when are you guys coming back? And we're like, I don't know, man. Hopefully one of these days the Padres won't play a game at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So they played one at 9 o'clock this morning today and lost again to the Reds. Should we be surprised? Should we be even remotely surprised? I mean, like on the scoreboard of, you know, from 1 to 10 amount of surprise, I'm going to give it about a half that the Padres would beat the playoff bound Phillies 2 out of 3, but lose to the lousy Reds 2 out of 3. That has been the story for the Padres all year long.
Say it one more time for me. How long has it been going on?
All year long.
Exactly.
So they beat good teams. They lose to lousy teams.
This has
got to end. This has got to change. This is going to drive us crazy if this keeps up for another season or two.
If your question is based off the time frame of when everybody thought the sky was falling and all was bad, I would say, yes, this should be a surprise because those folks thought everything was going to go exactly the opposite direction. But what we've seen in the last, I don't know, a week and a half, is a Padre team returned to the Padre team that we were watching the first half.
We were
half.
Frustrated with the first half of the season. We've just been frustrated with different things the second half of the season.
Right. They're 9-10, which is they're basically right at 500.
Doing their thing.
Month.
And they're beating good teams and losing to lousy ones. I mean, you know, they beat the Phillies and maybe knocked the Phillies right out of the playoffs. I mean, at the end of the season, the Phillies may end up missing this thing by a game or two.
Yeah.
They're going to look back on a couple of losses to the Padres. But the Reds, I mean, God, the Reds have a bunch of young guys. And, you know, I looked at the Reds pretty carefully in the last few days here, Tony. And I know the Padres have the hot lava talent and all the great young players.
But you're looking at
but
something.
But guess what?
The Reds do.
So do other teams. The other teams have some good young players, too. Nick Senzel is a good young player. Aristides Aquino did not homer in this series, but he scared the daylights out of you every time he came up. Josh Van Meter,
yeah.
Not a bad little player. And how about this Reds pitching staff? I mean, would you say they're ahead of the Padres, at least in their starting rotation? I mean, with the acquisition of Sonny Gray, the acquisition of Trevor Bauer, and the development of Luis Castillo, they have three frontline pitchers. Padres basically have zero. I mean, trying to get there maybe with Chris Paddock or Cal Quantrill, but the Padres don't have a single guy they can put in that category.
I think you got to look at it from the standpoint, not necessarily from a talent standpoint, is it that far ahead, or it probably is even from a talent standpoint, but pitching at the big league level, the Reds group is further along than the Padres group is, right? You don't have any of the restrictions you have on the Reds starting rotation as you have on the Padres starting rotation. Now, I believe that the Padres staff, when they are ready, that will it will be equal to, if not better, than what the Reds have. But right now, you can't argue that the Reds aren't a little bit further along, at least from a starting rotation standpoint, than the Padres are.
I'll tell you another thing. I did not know too much about their closer, Raisel Iglesias. The Padres made that guy look like Mariano Rivera the last 2 days. He just blew the Padres away last night and again today. And
he's got 26 of them.
I know he's got 26 saves. I mean, but he's also got a 2-8 record. So it's not like he's been lights out all season. You know, the Reds did something in this series that they hadn't done in over 50 years. And I tend to take it a little personally when it happens to my team. I look at it and I go, okay, what's the matter with my team? Why did they pull this off? And what they pulled off was Trevor Bauer struck out 11 Padres in the first game. And then yesterday it was
Gray.
Sonny Gray struck out 10. Now, today Luis Castillo only struck out 4. But in the first two games, their starters both struck out 10. The Reds hadn't had back-to-back starters do that in 51 years. That's pretty hard to believe.
Reagan,
first of all, I mean, what are the odds that you go 51 years with all the players that the Reds have had that they never had back-to-back 10 strikeout games like that? But it happened to the Padres, who also, by the way, wound up striking out 9 times by the time the game was over today. So
their strikeouts have been ticking up here. They had led with 19 or 18 at couple games before the last home game.
They're leading the league. Yeah. They're leading the National League in strikeouts. And, I mean, we've talked about this before, how the Astros, you know, the year before they won the World Series, were number one in the league. And then they decided, hey, it's time to put the ball in play. I got to believe the Padres are thinking the same thing. They just can't quite execute it yet because you can't strike out that many times and walk 0 times, which was the case today.
Yeah.
You're not going to win, and then you make an error that leads to 3 runs. I mean, you didn't get beat. You kind of beat yourself, and that's frustrating. I don't care where you are in the season. Now the Padres will have a day off, and now it's a fun homestand, if nothing else.
Right.
You get the two World Series teams come in. The Red Sox can come in, and they can say that they are World Series champs because they still will be for another month and a half until this season ends.
I think that boat is taken off as well.
Yes, I think that one's gone.
It's out to sea.
But it'll be fun to see the Red Sox come in. It'll be fun to see the Dodgers come in. But, you know, I'm frustrated again with the Padres and, you know, what they're trying to put together here. I'm not 100% sure. And I think that they're trying to figure out. By the way, have I ever mentioned that I can't stand the opener thing?
Yeah, I think you've mentioned it.
Have you mentioned it too?
I've mentioned it
too. Okay, good.
Yes.
I didn't want to say I was the only one.
No, you're not.
But as soon as I heard that the Padres are going with a bullpen day today, I'm like, come on, can we please just find somebody that can start a game? Why do we even have to do this bullpen thing? But, you know, everything's predicated on pushing Chris Paddock back a couple more days so he can rest till Friday. And, you know, so we have to put up with stuff like this. And I don't know who Yardley is.
Saw him in spring. He's a little side armor under a submariner, I guess you'd call
it. I had never heard of him before today.
Interesting that I find interesting, at least, is that it seems like Cal Quantrill is like the only one who has the trust to keep going out there and throwing pitches.
He's getting 105, 106 pitches like, right now.
And you know, with a little more efficiency, he's into the 7th, 8th inning. So I just find that to be unique to this
Quantrill
situation.
Quantrill is taking over the ace role. If you have to design and say we've got an ace, then Cal Quantrill's your guy. In fact, he's been far better than Paddock.
He's been really good.
The second
half
of the season, his ERA
really
is like 1.5 since the All-Star break. So, Padres, you know, look, they just keep kind of moping along here, and 59 and 67. We'll see if they can get a little streak put together at home, get something going. Machado sat out today. France moved back to third base. Urias didn't do much in this series. Mejia continues to hit at Great American Ballpark. He's hit four of his 11 career home runs there. Too bad he plays here in San Diego, because that it only does us good when he's in Cincinnati.
He's hitting 404 this month, though. He's doing a pretty good job.
No, look, hey. You know I'm a Mejia fan. You know I'm all over Mejia, and I wanna see him get that job and keep it.
We should expand on that in the next segment.
Well, we definitely will, because Hedges had a 4-for-4 game right in there.
I wanna
talk a little bit about that. I also wanna talk about something I touched on the last time we did a show, if I can remember back that far, but has Hunter Renfroe had a hit since Franmil Reyes was traded to the Cleveland Indians? I'm sure he has, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know.
As soon as the pressure was taken off Hunter Renfroe to perform, sorry, but he hasn't been performing. And that's a big concern that I have right now going forward. So let's talk about those two things when we come back. 833-288-0973 if you want to join us. The NFL season is getting closer and closer. Greg Camarillo, our resident NFL guy, former Charger receiver, rejoins this program. We haven't heard from Greg in a while, but he'll be on at 3:35 today, so look forward to talking with him, some NFL stuff, and then we'll get into some Chris versus the fans as well, chance for you to win some prizes. So first hour of the show, always a good one. Settle in, relax. Good to be back. Gwen and Chris, after a six-day layoff, feeling rusty, or you actually sound pretty good.
I feel pretty good, man.
Yeah, you're kind of recharged.
Yeah, exactly.
Get a little bounce. Get a little bounce in your step over here. Look out today, everybody. Tony Gwynn Jr.'s got a little bounce in his step. All right, we're going to come back and talk about Renfro, talk about Hedges, talk about where the Padres go from here, and we'll do that as we get rolling. Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan. Good afternoon, everyone.
So this week, at the end of the week, on Friday, we got ourselves a destination show. You can join us Friday for our live broadcast from the grand opening at Ravino the Foodery, located on Market Street, on the corner of 9th Ave in the East Village. This Friday, again, August 23rd, from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., stop by and say hello before the game and sign up to be the biggest fan to win prizes from 97.3 The Fan.
And I heard this place is unbelievable.
Trape, you went by there today,
right? Off the charts.
I did. I went by this morning to test everything out, and it looks great.
What, you ate everything?
No, they're not open quite yet, but they are getting ready to get open. And the food that they were making at the time, it smelled delicious. It looked delicious.
You didn't have any, though.
No, they didn't allow me to have any.
They wouldn't let you have
any. I heard you got yelled at, though, today. Why you in there?
Yeah, what'd you do?
Just being scrappy. I was peeking around too much.
That's just so
like, hey,
scrappy.
Were
you
there
trying to steal the secret recipe for the bolognese sauce?
Yeah,
or something?
I just wanted to bring home like a big thing of ham or something like that, or
big
prosciutto.
Thing of ham.
Prosciutto,
that's fabulous.
Oh, prosciutto.
Trying to steal food from the place that we're going to be broadcasting live from on Friday.
You know, I thought I had to everything to let everybody know what it
that's
tastes
fantastic.
Like.
You came away tasting nothing though, so yeah. You didn't even help on that end.
I know, and I'm starving.
That's fantastic. All right, well, when you come down to Ravino the Foodery on Friday, we'll make sure you get something to eat over there, and we'll keep Scraby away from you, so you won't be in any danger. Come on by and say hi, though. That should be some fun. Market Street and 9th, especially if you're coming down to see the first game of the Red Sox-Padres series. Come on down
early. These next six games for the Padres will be, at least from a fan standpoint, you get to see some team. Well, I want to say the Red Sox are good, but they're
all right.
They're good.
I mean, they're not. You know, they're 7-8 games over 500.
Right.
They're not the team they were last year, obviously.
No, you're not seeing a true World Series contender like
no.
You will the following series against the Dodgers.
Yeah, but it's going to be fun. It's still always fun anytime Boston comes out here. The only thing that's not fun about it, I got to be, you know, very honest, is I get tired of playing the three games against Boston like we're in Boston. I mean, it's going to be loud, and it's going to be Red Sox fans. I know the Padre fans are doing a little better.
Although I will say, that last Dodgers series, I was quite impressed. Like, it's been a very, very, very long time
right.
Since I can remember, you know, sitting up high enough to see like the entire stadium and it not
and feeling like we were in San Diego.
Exactly. And that's I felt that way last series against the Dodgers.
Yes, but last series against the Dodgers, the Padres were still somewhat kind of in contention. Now that is no longer the case. I just get concerned that the Red Sox are going to come up in the top of the first inning against Chris Paddock in the first game Friday night. Somebody's going to line one off the fence, and the place is going to go bonkers. And that just drives me crazy around here. But it's just something I guess we have to learn to live with over the years.
Let's talk about this catching situation.
Yeah,
obviously, Francisco Mejia has been given the majority of the playing time, and
I'd say he's earned it.
Yes,
right? They didn't give it to him.
No, not at all. Matter of fact, he had to wait his turn basically, and he's taken advantage of his time getting the bulk of the playing time, especially offensively. I mean, we've already talked about it. He's hitting 400, has four home runs there in this month of August, so he certainly is taking care of it from the offensive standpoint. I think defensively, clearly, he's not the better defender. I don't think there's very much argument there. But when, in Austin Hedges' standpoint, when you're struggling offensively as bad as he's struggling, it becomes a liability more offensively to have him in the lineup. And I think that's why Mejia has earned the right to continue to get the starts.
Oh, I agree. And, I think that there was a day and age in Major League Baseball where you could get away with a number eight hitting catcher that was batting about .190 and hit 10 home runs. There was a time in baseball where teams had that. As a matter of fact,
most teams had that.
They had shortstops that hit two home runs on the season and batted 200. And then they got all their runs from the outfield and the two corner positions,
yes,
first and third. But now baseball is just not like that anymore. It's just not. I mean, every single guy on every single team can hit, 290 and hit the ball out of the ballpark, 1 through 9 in the order.
Yeah.
So you can't afford to go out there with a 1 through 7 in your order. Otherwise, you're playing shorthanded. So that's why I think, Mejia is going to have to be the guy unless something changes. And as I said, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Austin Hedges, because I don't think they want to really keep him around here as a backup.
I don't think he would want to stay around.
No, he doesn't want to be a backup. The question is where is he going to go and be a starter? I mean, he's going to have to find somewhere where they're going to be willing to take a guy that, is only hitting 190.
Here's the thing is, I'm not sure, other than the superior arm that Mejia has, I'm not sure that he will ever be as solid defensively as Austin Hedges is. So if you're waiting around for that, you might be waiting for a very, very long time. But that doesn't mean he can't improve. I think he's improved from the start of the year till now defensively, but that doesn't mean that he can't continue to improve. He'll reach that ceiling either, though.
No, but can I also say, and this is going to sound really, hard on Austin Hedges, and I don't mean it to be, because I like Hedges probably a lot more than a lot of people out there like him. But it's not like he's Johnny Bench back there. I'm a little tired of the comparisons of everybody saying this is one of the greatest defensive catchers in the history of baseball. And in fact, I was talking with somebody the other day who said the analytics told them that Austin Hedges is not just the best defensive catcher in baseball, he's the best defensive player in all of baseball. And I don't know how they come up with this stuff, but I do know this. Yesterday in the first inning, Josh Van Meter stole second base, and Austin Hedges' throw sailed into center field, and he got the third. So he can make an error, too, and I don't expect perfection from anybody, but I've seen some balls get past him this year. I've seen some throws go awry. I think Austin Hedges is a great defensive catcher, but he's not perfect. And he's not irreplaceable back there. And that's why I see Mejia taking that job, because the hitting is so much better.
First,
so,
I've never heard anybody say he's best history. I've never heard the history comparison.
But how about best defender in baseball right now at any position?
I don't know if I believe
that's
that
a
either.
Lot.
I don't know if I believe
that's
that.
That's
saying
either. A lot.
Yeah.
That's
really saying
is.
A whole lot.
Whoever said that.
That's putting extras on
it. It's a nice opinion, but I don't know that I'm going to go ahead and buy into that.
But I do believe, I mean, there is a... to me, there is a huge, huge gap. And even if he is, Austin is, he's not, no catcher's not making any errors. That includes Yadier Molina, who's probably the best in the game.
Johnny Bench, I'm sure, threw a couple into center field also.
There's definitely a huge difference defensively from a receiving blocking standpoint in those two catchers.
That's a big part of the job.
That's a huge part. And another thing is, you look back, and we never confirmed what Curb was mad at, but those type of heated situations.
Oh, in the game that they lost.
Those don't tend to happen when Austin's behind the plate. That being said, Francisco Mejia has earned every right to keep getting thrown out there and keep performing. There's no doubt about it.
And real quick, we got a minute left before the break, but what about Hunter Renfroe? Are you concerned that he is it just coincidence that he happens to be in a slump? Because power hitters, when they go into slumps, they go into slumps. I mean, that's kind of the part of the deal you get with a power hitter.
It could be a coincidence, but my concern is that he isn't making those adjustments just yet, because it was a concern with me. But regardless of whether Fran Mills stayed or not, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Hunter's at the point now. He's been at the big league level, what, 3 years now?
Three
and some change. So you want to start seeing, you know, some of the same things. I mean, we can look at his numbers. He's improved, what, the homers?
31's a record for him. He's already broken that with 40 games to go. So, I mean, at the end of the season, he's going to look back and say, hey, it was a great power season. But that batting average just slipped all the way to 231,
right,
Tony.
That's my point.
That's pretty low for where he had been.
When I see Hunter and I watch him, I think there's more in there. I think there can be more to his game when it's all said and done. But he just hasn't been able to. Last year, I mean, he didn't have as good of power numbers. He hit better, though. He hit 248, almost 250, and 403 at bat. So power numbers have gone up. There's no doubt about it. But I think there's still something to be desired. By the way, he hit 26 last year. It wasn't like he had a poo-poo year.
Although here's where I'm getting concerned, though. The last three series, Tampa Bay, Philadelphia, Cincinnati, no home runs, no RBIs.
Right.
You can't have that.
That's what I'm saying.
If the middle guy in your order, he's got to produce something for
you. If you're not hitting home runs, you still need to be doing some type of damage.
Find a way. And the Padres, that's been a general problem all year.
Right.
If they don't hit home runs, they don't score.
Right.
I mean, we've seen that all year long, too. So, all right. When we come back, we're going to switch over to some football.
Yes, we are. We are going to switch over to some football. We had them all last season, and we're going to have them on this season. Former NFL wide receiver Greg Camarillo is going to join us next to talk about the biggest NFL storyline. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Sello, Gwynn and Chris, 97.3, The Fan.
This is the Tony Gwynn intro music.
Yeah.
But I'll do my best. Welcome back, Gwynn and Chris. God, I do terrible at that.
You're telling me in your radio career you've never been a jazz guy on like a jazz station?
You know, you're right, I have.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I've been a jazz DJ and, you know.
K-jazz?
Of course. How do you think I got my start? Spinning jazz records. Welcome back to Gwynn and Chris. 3:37 is the time. Welcome to another NFL season. We are less than, 2 weeks away from tomorrow is the opening game of the regular season. Green Bay, Chicago, Thursday night. And that's coming up. We're getting close. And we're going to talk some football right now going out on the SDCCU fan hotline. Our buddy Greg Camarillo, the former Charger, and I might add Miami Dolphin heroic wide receiver, joins us here on the program. Greg, how you been?
Good, Chris. Good. Yourself?
Doing well. Doing very well. I got to be honest with you. I've thought a little bit more about you this off season because the Miami Dolphins, you know, my team, might be headed for one of those winless seasons this year. That's what everybody's saying. Might need somebody to make an overtime catch in like week 14 to save them from going winless, which is what you did many years ago. So I'm hoping it's not going to be that bad in Miami this year, but it could be. Who knows?
You know, when you look at just roster and numbers in the offseason, they have not set themselves up to be successful. But I do not wish a 0 or 1 win season upon anybody. So I'm hoping they can get it together.
Yeah. Having gone through it, you know what it's like, and it's got to be just awful. I mean, it's hard enough to show up and knock heads every week and play football. You want to get a couple of wins mixed in there.
Greg, let me ask you a question, man. We got two holdouts this year, two big-name holdouts, Melvin Gordon and Ezekiel Elliott. How do you see these playing out? It sounds like the Chargers and Gordon are nowhere close, and It kind of sounds the same with the Cowboys and Zeke.
Yeah, and it's all interesting because it's running backs that are holding out, and it's running backs that are being undervalued in the NFL right now. And what we learned from watching Le'Veon Bell is that it doesn't necessarily pay off. You know, granted, you could always get hurt in there, you know, in the middle of it. And Le'Veon Bell, therefore, would have made himself some money. But to be honest with you, spending big bucks on a running back is not there. And you know, I don't blame any player for holding out. Training camp sucks. Preseason games suck. If you can skip them and you can afford to skip them, skip them. But if I'm a GM and I have a few dollars to put out there, there are other positions I need to take care of first before I take care of running back.
So, I mean, you played with the Chargers in that organization. I said as soon as Melvin Gordon decided to hold out that he was going to be in for a tough time, because the Chargers, at least the history, has always been that they don't exactly give you a phone call right away and go, hey, we'd like to double our offer so we can get you into camp. I don't ever recall that happening with the Chargers. And, you know, I don't know. Do you think Melvin Gordon learns from Le'Veon Bell and says, okay, I'll just take a season off and get myself elsewhere? Do you think it could go all the way to that?
He's definitely looking at that. But the big component of that is Melvin Gordon is not Le'Veon Bell. Mm. He is a good running back. Melvin is a key component to the offense. He's just been hurt a lot, and I think that's the hesitancy in paying running backs, is that if you give them these big bucks and they're not out there on the field, then you're hurting at other positions. But, you know, I see this as Melvin will be back week one. He's got some money in his pocket. He can afford these fines. He'll be back on the field, and the Chargers need him. They've got some key injuries hurting them. But if you look at rosters when people are healthy, the Chargers look great this year.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. Greg, I got to ask you a little bit about your helmet when you played. I've played with many ball players, right, that if you told them that they could no longer use the model bat that they were using, they would lose their minds, and it would be a problem. So fast forward to this Antonio Brown situation. From the outside looking in, it looks really silly about this helmet, right? Man, all you got to do is just put a different helmet on it. Can you shed some light on maybe we're the ones that don't know what we're talking about on the outside looking in?
No, man, you know exactly what you're talking about. It is still. So it's you know what? I had a helmet switch in my career. When I was playing in Miami, I had the old style helmet. I was traded to Minnesota. I put on the new style helmet, and in the first game got a concussion. So I immediately switched back. And it's like, you look good, you feel good, whatever feels good, you roll with. And he wants that feel of the old helmet. The new ones, they feel a little odd. But I was watching, have you been watching Hard Knocks?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So I was watching Hard Knocks last night, and they showed some close-ups of his helmet, because that's an important part. And he's telling me that, or he's telling the media that the new helmets limit his vision. And then I look at his old helmet, and he has the Deion Sanders bars on the side, which limits your vision, and he has a visor on the front. So I'm not buying it. I think Antonio Brown just doesn't
want to
be practicing right now.
I'm so glad you said that, Greg, because when you mentioned earlier, you know, if you could miss some training camp and you could miss some preseason games, by all means, go for it. Do you think that has a lot to do?
It sucks, man.
Do you think this has a lot to do with what his antics are really trying to avoid, basically?
I think so, man. You know, why beat up your body when you don't have to? He is arguably the best wide receiver. He will be totally fine come week one. Derek Carr will throw him the ball. Teams will double cover him, and he'll still come up with huge plays. So why not take an extra month off and jump back in when the season time?
Okay. Yeah, this is not new stuff.
No.
I mean, I don't remember. I don't know if Greg was around. I've talked about Leslie O'Neal before, the old Charger linebacker defensive end, but I don't think he ever came to training camp. He came up with a different reason every single year to hold out. And then right before the season, he'd find a reason to come back, and he was ready to go.
Yep.
So, you know.
Hey, man, if you're talented enough to get away with it, and you're not going to alienate your teammates, if you're someone that people like, then, you know, that's just how it works.
Greg Camarillo is with us on the SDCCU fan hotline, the former Charger receiver. And, I'm trying to figure out anymore why the preseason is even played. I mean, honestly, almost every single key player on every single team sits out all the games now. I mean, I don't think Phillip Rivers has put on a uniform yet for 2 weeks. And I guess it's good for these young players, but how much can we really find out about a rookie quarterback who's playing against third-string players in these preseason games?
Yeah, there's only one reason that preseason games are played, and that's money. The owners charge full price for the tickets. They fill up the stadium. They get TV rights. They make a lot of money off it, but you don't learn much. For your fringe guys, where I was several times in my career, it's a huge opportunity to prove that you can show up on game day and make an impact. But so also on Hard Knocks, we saw Kyler Murray talking to Antonio Brown, saying they were throwing it all at me, meaning they were blitzing him from all angles. Coaches make agreements to limit the amount of blitzing that's done. We're not going to bring a safety, or we're not going to bring two linebackers at the same time. Mm. So Kyler Murray is getting frazzled by elementary blitzes. So he is in for a rude awakening come week one when they are coming from every angle.
So, Greg, are you saying that him telling, I think it was AB and that at the end of the game, man, you guys are throwing it. That was just like the beginner's course of
that
defense?
That was vanilla blitzing.
Absolutely.
Oh,
Tony,
wow.
To put it in your world, that's like going into a spring league game and a pitcher can only throw two pitches, and you know one of those two is coming. It is elementary defense that they're putting out there. But, you know, I mean, Kyler Murray, on the other side of that, has shown an incredible amount of talent, the way he runs and the way he throws. I have been impressed. So, as long as he gets his head in the books and watches some film and prepares, it'll be fun to watch him out there.
Yeah, I mean, the athleticism of these quarterbacks still is a lot of fun to watch, no question. Greg Camarillo's with us. Greg, last thing for me on the wide receivers and the new rule with pass interference and being able to challenge that. Do you think that is going to open up a Pandora's box of crazy things that are going to happen every time the ball's thrown 60 yards down the field? Or do you think it's going to be much ado about nothing?
Absolutely. I hate it. I mean, there's pass interference on every play. And, you know, there's no language that's going to say, like, oh, if you really hit him, then it's pass interference. Or if you barely touch him, it's pass interference. So it's going to be an issue, and you know, hopefully they can figure it out. But I see it coming down to, like you just mentioned, a big play at the end of a game. A DB reaches out and barely touches the receiver. Technically, it's pass interference. And now that they're going to go back and review it, I think they're going to end up calling some fluff that really doesn't need to be reviewed.
Games are never going to be over now. I mean, you're going to be, honestly, you get the ball with 12 seconds to go, just throw it 70 yards down the field, and then last for a pass interference call, and you might get it. You can kick the field goal.
I
could happen.
Totally agree with you.
Greg,
totally agree with you. Chris, I know you're a football traditionalist that doesn't like all that, so I'm with you on this one, man. Just make it a judgment call. Sometimes refs make it, sometimes they miss it.
Exactly. We can all live with it's not a perfect world
no,
out there.
No.
So why should it be perfect in the National Football League? Hey, Greg, thanks so much. Great catching up with you.
Thanks,
look forward
Greg.
To talking to you soon again. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, fellas.
All right, Greg Camarillo right there on the SDCCU fan hotline. SDCCU has low mortgage loan rates, equal housing opportunity. Apply now at sdccu.com. Really like having him on. Fun to talk. He always has a good take on everything football related. And I'm still excited for the season, but it is going to be wacky when these games get down to the wire and they're close.
Oh, whack-a-doo.
And every single play is being challenged on a pass interference. I mean, you think baseball takes a long time, but you see how long some of these football games start taking when they're close in the fourth quarter.
By the end of the year, this will cause so many eye rolls, you know, it's not even going to be funny.
Yeah. I saw one preseason game a couple of weeks ago, at least a quarter of it, and I think there was a flag for pass interference on almost every single play, because I think what's happening is the officials don't want to be second-guessed
right.
or wrong. So if they think they see anything now, that flag's coming out. And it's going to take a while to get adjusted to all that. So we'll see.
Got some phone lines open, ladies and gentlemen. Chris versus the Fan on deck.
Let's play some trivia. 833-288-0973. If you have never joined us for Chris versus the Fan, this is a pretty good time to do so. We got a pair of tickets to give away to see the Dodgers take on the Padres. That's Monday night's ball game at Petco Park. So get on the phone lines, 833-288-0973. Right now is a great time to call. We don't normally have lines open for a little Chris versus the Fans, but we do right now. So make sure you join us and get on board and take your best shot at some trivia. I actually ran into, I think it was Tom and Zach, and Tom's the dad, Zach's the kid. They both have taken me on at separate times in Chris versus the Fan. I saw them here at the studio because they were picking up their prize.
Oh, after a
call. And they were very happy to tell me that they had beaten me. Because otherwise they wouldn't be picking up their prize, right? So,
man, where the heck was I? I would have loved to see this.
Yeah, well, you don't get to see the good stuff. You're always busy in the back getting yourself into trouble.
Yeah.
But it was nice seeing those guys. I appreciate them coming by. And Zach, by the way, the young kid is just beginning his first year at Patrick Henry High School next week. So best of luck to Zach. And it was nice meeting those guys. And I'm glad that they were winners. And I hope you can win as well. Let's get going.
If you had one shot, one opportunity to take down the human almanac himself...
Howdy do.
Now is your time.
Listen to me, this guy is dangerous.
Now is your opportunity to win a prize.
Well, I hope you know what you're in for.
Chris versus the Fans starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
Scraby, give me some rules.
You have to make it through three questions. Each question is going to get more difficult. If you get the question right, you move on. If you get the question wrong and Chris gets it right, you're eliminated. But if he gets it wrong, you have a chance to move on to the next question, or you just win the prize.
All right, here we go. Chance for you to win tickets to see the Dodgers and Padres. Let me introduce the master of ceremonies of Chris versus the Fans. That would be Tony Gwynn Jr.
Thank you very much. I was logging out of my mock draft here, so excuse me for a second.
glad to see he's focused on the important things this afternoon. Yeah.
All right, let's get to our first contestant, Brian and Linda Vista. Welcome to Gwynn and Chris. Thanks for calling in on this beautiful Wednesday.
Happy hump day.
Hey, happy hump day. All right, let's get to the first question. What San Diego high school did Redskins quarterback Alex Smith attend?
Oh, Alex Smith. I want to say Helix.
Good one.
Helix is correct.
Can you believe he and Reggie Bush were in the same backfield? That's unbelievable.
I saw it with dos ojos.
Dos ojos.
We did one of their games. The coach, John Quintero, and I did a Helix championship game against, I think it was Oceanside or somebody at the stadium.
At Qualcomm,
back when they used to play at the stadium. And Alex Smith was the quarterback. Reggie Bush was the running back. And you know Jason Bott, our guy who does production and produces for us, and he did the game for us on Channel 4. And so he went and talked to the people at Helix and said, hey, we got to, focus on one of your players for the pregame show. They gave us some other guy. We didn't even focus on either Alex Smith or Reggie Bush. And I always found that to be comical, looking back on that game now, thinking we had two NFL star players in the backfield, and they weren't the focal point of the Helix team. So,
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, let's get to question number two. Who is the most recent player to win back-to-back MVPs in baseball?
Oh, I'm sure Chris knows this one.
You're sure?
Back-to-back MVPs. Let's go, Mike Trout.
Mike Trout is incorrect.
That's
a good guess.
That was a great guess. I don't know the answer to this. There was a time when... Strangely enough, I love telling these stories because actually what I'm doing is I'm trying to shuffle through my mind and come up with an answer.
We've already figured that part out.
You guys figured that out.
I've also got a few complaints from the players out there that you're taking too much time when they got a time limit.
All right. Then I'll say Miguel Cabrera.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
That is correct.
I cannot stand that.
Well, you're the one that made me hurry up and get my answer.
Well, if you knew it, just say it.
That was the only name I could think of. I probably would have talked myself out of it had you given me a little more time.
Sorry, Brian. Thanks for competing. Let's move to the next contestant, sorry, Brad Brian. And Rancho Bernardo. Welcome
you
to
should
Gwyn
see
Chris.
The look on these guys' faces when I said Miguel Cabrera. They both were as angry as I've ever seen them. Especially Scrape.
Brad, welcome to the show.
Hey, boys. Free bird.
Free bird.
Sure.
Here we go.
I'm going to see Leonard Skinner on Friday, man.
Oh, nice, nice.
Very
oh,
nice, yeah. Very nice. All right, here we go. Question number one. Where did Saquon Barkley play his... Saquon Barkley play his college football?
Michigan State
is incorrect.
I think that's where Le'Veon Bell went.
That is where Le'Veon Bell went.
Man, I should have this like that. Saquon Barkley.
Wow.
God, how do I not
really?
Know this? Nah, it's not coming to my head.
Wow.
So I think Brad's going to luck out because I'm going to have like a guess of 1 out of 100 schools.
And your guess is?
Come on, man.
LSU.
Time limits here.
LSU is incorrect.
I'm stunned. By this.
Why did I forget?
The answer is Penn State.
Penn State, yeah. You know what? I saw him. I was on the field. Mm. The Aztecs played at Penn State, and he was in the game, and he was running up and down the field. I can now recall that.
All right, let's go to question number two, Brad.
Good deal, Brad. You're still alive.
All right.
Which of the following players was selected earliest in the 2000 NFL draft? And we got four names for you. Sebastian Janikowski.
What year?
2000.
Okay.
Tom Brady, LeVar Arrington, or Brian Urlacher?
Who was drafted first?
Who was drafted earliest?
Drafted
earliest out of those four
earliest.
Guys.
I'm going to go Janikowski because I think it was a shock that a kicker went that high.
He did go high, but he wasn't the earliest one.
Oh. Well, I know it wasn't Brady because he was 199.
He's still bitter about
so
it.
He's
so
still
you know
upset.
It's not him.
So it's down between Urlacher and who was the other one?
Arrington.
I have no idea. I'll say Urlacher.
Urlacher is incorrect.
Oh, man.
It was LeVar Arrington out of?
Penn State. That one I got.
We have 40 seconds to get
all
this
right,
last
Brad,
question.
Let's get this last question in. Here we go. What athlete famously said, victory is fleeting, losing is forever?
God, it's a baseball player. I'm going to go Ty Cobb.
Ty Cobb is incorrect. Chris, for the steal. We got
stay there, though.
Yeah, I don't have any idea. Willie Mays.
Willie Mays is also incorrect.
Wow.
Brad, you got yourself a victory.
Brad, you freebirded that. You didn't get one question right.
That's the beauty of the game.
That very rarely happens. Nice job, Brad. Stay
on
the line.
Hang on, and Thomas will take care of you.
That's a good quote. Who said that?
Billie Jean King. Not a baseball player.
Not a baseball player. Billie Jean King's brother was a baseball player.
Indeed. We got to go to break when we come back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.